B-Pod Studios.
Covers the Eagles, ESPN, and 97.5 The Fanatic does a great, great job. T-Mac, Tim McManus. What do you say, T-Mac?
What's going on, guys? So I'm standing like 250 yards from the practice bubble here at NovaCare, the Eagles, with their last practice of the week before going up to the Falcons. And even though I'm that far away, I can still hear the noise that they are pumping into this bubble, simulating the crowd noise that they're going to have in Mercedes-Benz Dome here. So,
that's great.
Making sure it's nice and loud for their final prep.
That's terrific. And Carson working on his hand signals to make this thing. We've been talking, T-Mac, a lot of what you think how do you think the Falcons will play the Eagles and what the Eagles' game plan should be. Without giving you any of our bias, what do you think the Eagles' game plan is going to be?
Well, I think on the defensive side of the ball, it's all going to be about putting pressure on Matt Ryan. And one thing that, as we know, Jim Schwartz isn't huge on blitzing, but that is a different story when they play the Falcons traditionally. So Matt Ryan has struggled clearly against the Eagles in the three games since 2016, all of his numbers well below his averages, and the Falcons are 0-3. And in those games, Schwartz dialed up on average 27% of blitzing on Matt Ryan's dropbacks, and that's compared to an average of 19% against the rest of the teams during that time. So he does like to turn up the heat on Matty Ice, and I think that's what
not exactly Jim
doing.
Johnson, but yeah. For him, it's a big deal.
That's a big number for him. Yeah,
I
mean, he doesn't really like to blitz all that much, and it wasn't successful in Week One against Washington. I mean, every time seemingly he dialed one up, they ended up hitting a big one over top of him. So, but I don't think that will necessarily deter him, given kind of the historical evidence that's the way to go against this quarterback. And then I think on the offensive side, you're going to see where last week was the Deshaun Jackson show. I think the effects of that and the way that Atlanta plays defense anyway, with kind of the single high safety, the cover three zone, keeping everything in front of them, that this is more of like a tight end game, for the Eagles. I think that, this is an opportunity for Zach Ertz and Dallas Goedert to go off with what should be plenty of operating room over the middle there.
Hey, Tim, one of the head scratchers from that first game against the Redskins, and I'm wondering about going into week two here, was the usage of two guys, one being Darren Sproles and one being Jordan Howard. First of all, can you kind of, if you've looked at this and talked to people down there, why so much Sproles in that situation? And will we see more Jordan Howard this week? Because it really looked like, he was picking up big chunks, didn't have a lot of carries, six carries, but over 7 yards per. Will we see more of him this week?
Yeah, I do think that we'll see more of him this week. And it was a head-scratcher for me as well. I certainly didn't think that Sproles was going to be featured that heavily. And I don't think that it's sustainable. I don't believe that that's what you're going to see on a regular basis. But it's hard to deny, man. Doug Peterson loves him some Sproles and can't seem to help himself. But to his credit, it was effective against that team. I think when you look at what Atlanta likes to do or how their defense is constructed, it's a lot of lighter bodies. Faster guys, they're built on speed and not on power. So I think it's a perfect opportunity to put some power to them. And that means that you use your offensive line to open up some holes, and you use a power back in Jordan Howard, to kind of lay the thunder on him a little bit. So I do think that this could be a Jordan Howard game. It's going to fluctuate week to week. They have some talented backs. One thing that makes this team difficult to game plan for is that they can deploy several players at different positions. That makes it impossible to know exactly how they're going to come at you. But, I could see Howard having a more of an impact in this game.
Let me ask you a question, because, I'm with you on that, too. And what was the feeling around Carson? They had to be ecstatic, right? And he had to be feeling it. Did you get that sense that, he saw it now. He felt it. He was terrific. And was he walking around like just a little bit of, you could sense the confidence?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, he has never lacked for confidence, but I think that it is back to, like 2017 levels. I mean, we know what he's been dealing with in the years since then, and now he's back in good mind and good health. And what the coaches saw out of Wentz, I think, is exactly what they were hoping for. I mean, he walked away, technically got sacked once, but that was really when he scrambled back to the line of scrimmage for no gain. Was hardly hit at all. Credit to the offensive line, but also Wentz was getting the ball out of his hands quicker. He was going through his reads and making quick decisions. And the way that Peterson was crediting him, in some ways was just for the dump downs as much as, the big bombs that he was, he wasn't forcing things. And he was going through his progressions quickly in order to make positive plays where in other years it might have gone the other way or he would have just tried to escape the pocket. So I think what they're seeing is kind of a quarterback that's coming into his own where he's starting to blend the physical gifts now with a mastery of the offense that is allowing him to kind of do, a multitude of things where he can beat you, as you saw with the Alshon Jeffrey touchdown, by slipping out, avoiding pressure, and throwing a dart. He can throw a 50-yard ball on a dime, as he did multiple times for DeSean Jackson. And then also he can operate within the construct of the offense and just take what the defense gives him. And I think, all those things coming together, was on display week one and is a really good sign for this quarterback and for this team.
Yeah, if that's a harbinger of things to come, that's great, Tim. And I saw the video you tweeted out on the second DeSean touchdown of Wentz at the, in shotgun, seeing what the defense gave him and then checking and making the hand signals to DeSean, and they go for the 53-yard touchdown. And those guys being on the same page this early is really interesting to me. How did that come about for these guys to get in such a great spot just one game in with DeSean back with the Eagles and with Carson Wentz?
97.5 The Fanatic.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. Like most of us, Keith Urban also has a bucket list. You may be surprised to learn what is and is not on his. Text Keith to 45911 to read and learn more about the central theme of Keith's bucket list. Get a link to the story sent right to your phone when you text Keith to 45911. Go inside country music at BackstageCountry.com.
Gatto and Mertitus Middays.
I think it's a credit to the work that they put in the offseason, and that was one of, the question marks or concerns coming in was how long would it take for Wentz and Jackson to get on the same page, and when we saw it didn't take very long. But these guys were spending time not just on the sidelines, they're in practice, obviously practicing with one another, but would spend the extra time kind of away from this facility to kind of build up that rapport. And I think you have to give Jackson a ton of credit. And there's been talk about the maturity that he's undergone since last time he was here. But he was at practice all the time. He was putting in the work. And that's not something that was at full tilt when he was in Philly the first time around. So there was a big change there. And I think that he deserves credit. We know that Wentz is going to always be here, kind of buried in the playbook, but Jackson was right at his hip, so that's a big part of it, but I think that does spell some real positive things for this offense. The fact that, and yeah, like the big, the long passes to one another, like being in sync there, that's great. But the play that you point out, Wentz sees something in protection, he goes towards the line of scrimmage, he looks over at Jackson, and Jackson's doing the hand signal like he's spotting what Wentz appears to be picking up on, mm-hmm. And then boom, 52 yards. I mean, that's an absolute credit to them week one.
Yeah, the other thing that was big, and we're talking to T-Mac, Tim McManus on the Comcast Business Hotline, is the fact that he and Alshon, despite the fact that they had, their best corner on them, I mean, Alshon was a factor and a big one, and I think it goes a long way to cement their relationship as well.
I think that's right. And I think that this could be an Alshon Jeffrey type game too. I mean, we talked about the tight ends having a pretty big day, but when you have the kind of performance that Jackson did to open up the season, it's only natural for the defense that you're facing the next week to react to that. It has to be in Dan Quinn's mind, like, we got to stop DeSean. I mean, that's what we have to do. And so I think that you're going to be seeing, whether it's their best players or certainly their coverage, leaning that way and making sure they're not getting burned there. And so I think that Jeffrey could be in line for another big day. And I agree. I mean, it's good that Wentz was able to feed a few of his weapons in that game. And it's going to be this kind of balance to make sure that all of these guys are feeling sort of fed throughout the season. Like Jackson at the podium on Sunday was saying that Aguilar was kind of, he was down after the game because he didn't get into the action. That's the kind of stuff that you have to monitor, and that's the only issue that with having so many weapons. And so, Wentz, I think, will be spreading the ball around as the season goes along, and these guys just have to be patient.
Yeah, you don't want to hear my response to Nelson Aguilar.
All right. I do, actually.
I mean, come on, dude. Yeah, there's two guys that need to eat, all right? And it's DeSean Jackson and Alshon Jeffrey. Ertz is always going to get his. You're going to get a Goddard and Alshon in the backs or whatever. But the two main receivers, because those are the guys that matter, and you know better than anybody, that police that room. So those guys need to be fed. And the other guys, is the reason why you're a role player and a bit player, and you got to accept that. But forget that. Micah Fitzpatrick, anything there, my brother?
Well, I think that, number one, I think that he would be a great fit. A versatile player a talented player who could come in and fill a multitude of roles. And I think the one that would right out of the chute would be kind of that third safety. And then eventually could take over for one of these safeties long term as they get up in age. So I think that the fit is there. And we know the way that Roseman operates, that he often puts markers down and definitely picks up the phone. So I think you're going to see those things happen. But it sounds like the asking price is a first-round pick. And so that, as they kind of look for their equations of value, does that fit in there? So I guess right now I'd probably lean against him coming in here. But as we know with the Eagles, you can't really count Howie Roseman out. And that's especially true if you have a talent like that that becomes available and is seemingly a perfect fit and would fill a need for this team.
I heard something for the first time, a first-round pick. Timmy has the Philly accent.
I love it. I love it.
A little peck. Philly accent in there?
Yeah, I like that, Tim.
Right. First-round pick.
All right, Tim, moment of truth. We ask it every week. What happens in Atlanta?
So earlier in the week, I was leaning towards the Falcons, looking at kind of the psychology factor of it, thinking the playoff team at home, Sunday Night Football, the whole thing. But as I've gone through and the more people I've talked to, I've started leaning in the other direction. The main matchups that have me looking at that is along the fronts, both ways. Atlanta's offensive line is having some issues. They just lost their first-round pick. Lindstrom to a foot injury. He's on IR. Another addition for them, McGarry, has a heart condition that he's working back from and has the split carries, a tackle. And it's an offensive line that's in flux right now. And I think that even though there's questions about how well the Eagles can rush the passer, I think they do effectively in Atlanta, and that's going to work to their advantage. And then, I also think that, the single best performance in week one was the Eagles offensive line. Now, they really showed something there. And kept Wentz clean. And I just think that they have the advantage in that matchup as well. For those reasons, these games are often won along the front. I think the Eagles have advantages in both of them. So I'm gonna pick the Eagles to win by a field goal.
Oh, I like it.
High scoring game?
30-27. I think you should see both teams air it out.
Yeah, I agree.
I think both teams are going to air it out.
That's a good peck.
Yep.
I like it.
That is a nice peck.
Hey, Tim, enjoy it. Safe travels. We'll talk to you next week.
You're the man, bro.
All right, boys. Sounds good. See ya.
There he is. Tim McManus on the Comcast Business Hotline, ESPN, ESPN.com. Does a great job covering Eagles.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. Picking five of Carrie Underwood's best music videos was no easy task, but after some debate, we landed on five we believe rise to the top. Did Carrie's 2014 hit Something in the Water make our top five? Find out when you text Carrie to 45911 and scroll through the list on BackstageCountry.com. Text Carrie to 45911 to get your eyes on our favorite Carrie Underwood music videos.